This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
That was our miraculous announcement. We've got one more for you. We have a second radio show after the Paracast. If you want to hear that show, you've got to be a member of the Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com. That's where you get all the information. We give you the commercial-free version of this show. Lots of benefits for a modest subscription rate. Our price, cheap. plus.theparacast.com. Miraculous Times with Gary Lachman. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I was saying it was 1983. I was in Europe with a friend of mine, and we were on this kind of mini search of the miraculous, and we went to places like Chartres Cathedral in France, and we also found in Fontainebleau, which is outside of Paris, where Gurdjieff, this esoteric teacher from the 20s and 30s I mentioned earlier, had this institute of the harmonious development of man. So we found this place where he had it in the forest in Fontainebleau, and we went to Glastonbury and Stonehenge and so on. But someplace I wanted to go, part of the search of my own, was to go meet Colin Wilson. And he lived, as I said before, he had moved down to the very end, the westernmost tip of England in Cornwall in the late 50s. And when I went down there in 1983, he was very friendly. Someone had given me his phone number. I figured exactly how I got it. Somebody, probably a bookseller in London. And I called him from a phone box in Penzance, and he was very friendly and said, yes, please come by, and yes, you can stay, you know, you can stay the night and all that. And then I went there and had this wonderful evening with him where he was explaining his ideas about consciousness to me and how it relates to, you know, different areas of existentialism and other philosophy. I really felt at the end of a heavily wine-fueled evening that I had grasped it. You know, I really had got my hands around it. But the next morning when I woke up, it had slipped through my fingers. And then I carried on a correspondence with him after that. What had happened was that he became a kind of mentor, you know, for me. He was I was a fan, became an acquaintance, then a friend. I visited him different times down in Cornwall. Whenever he would come to L.A., where I was living at the time, to give a talk or something, we would meet up. At one point, he actually stayed with me when I was house-sitting in this wonderful place that I call the Zen Castle up in the Hollywood Hills. It was owned by one of the owners of the Bodhi Tree, this metaphysical bookshop I worked in. And they were on holiday, and they asked me to house-sit, and I did. And Wilson was coming there to give a talk. And I said, well, why don't you stay with me? And I have this great, huge place. So he did. So I got to know him very well. And his ideas really influenced all of my own books, all of my own ideas. And I think I've made that pretty clear in my books over the years. But I didn't feel I could write a full-length book about him, basically, until he passed away. And I don't feel he obliged me by doing that so that I could actually write the book. But when it actually happened, I mean, I don't say it so much in the book itself, but I wrote an article about this. That when I heard about his passing, I was in Amsterdam, or I was in the Netherlands. I was giving a talk at a conference there. And then when it was confirmed that, you know, he had died, I really felt bereft. I felt like a hole, you know, that kind of emotional intensity that you feel about people that are very close to you. And that's how I felt. And other people knew him as well. I mean, I wasn't the only one. He had many, many fans. Many, many people visited him. Their home down in Cornwall was a kind of site of pilgrimage for many people. And he knew lots and lots of people. So I wasn't in an exceptional case in any way. But there was just something about his ideas that really, you know, grabbed me. And what I wanted to do in the book was to show, actually, there is one linchpin holding together all the different books he writes about crime. He wrote much, much, much about crime. He wrote wonderful books about crime, the history of crime. Fantastic book called The Criminal History of Mankind, which you could devote a whole episode to. About the occult, about the paranormal, about literature, about philosophy, about psychology, about sex, and so many other things. But there's a single kind of thing that holds it all together, and it's this question of freedom and what he calls, at the beginning of the occult, the paradoxical nature of freedom. Now, freedom is something that, when it's threatened, we know exactly how valuable it is and how important it is, and we will fight tooth and nail, body and soul, to hold on to it or to regain it. But the weird thing about us is that once the crisis has passed, once we have regained the freedom again, we invariably, against our best efforts, slip into this kind of taking it for granted. We kind of lose hold of why it's important. And this is the existential dilemma. This is why we go through life, most of our lives, in this kind of half asleep state. And it's only when crisis face us or some other, you know, shocking, demanding kind of thing that we kind of wake up and say, oh my God, like, what's really happening here? What's going on with that? That's what he devoted his mind to in trying to analyze in all these different books. And he came up with a way he felt was a means of kind of working against this kind of inner lethargy, this kind of inner boredom, this kind of devaluing of our experience that we that we unconsciously perform all the time. And that's what I wanted to get across to the readers of my book.
You know, freedom is something that, at least in this country, is, number one, people really don't understand what it means. And even if they did, they'd still be in that place of taking it for granted, not really appreciating the wonderful freedoms that we still have in this country, even though they're being degraded daily. And we're seeing some real disturbing movement towards more of an authoritarian, you know, system. But that's a very good point. I never really thought of his work. I understand completely what you're saying, but as a unifying principle, it's a little bit eye-opening for me to hear that that actually echoed throughout his work, which, of course, I'm not totally familiar with. I've only read maybe 10 of his books, maybe 8, 10. So that's a very good point, and I do think it's a point that should be underscored in you know, what may be the cusp of interesting times that might feature a little less freedom than we're used to.
No, this is true. I mean, I'm saying the idea when it's something, freedom is something that's physically threatened. We all know how important it is. He in the beginning of the occult, he says about how, you know, when the tanks rolled into Warsaw or something like that, everyone knew exactly what freedom was, and it was very clear and clean. And he says it's something, it was rather like the silver that someone, a burglar, was coming to steal. You know, we knew it was something we wanted. But when we don't have that threat, it all becomes kind of misty and vague. So you have these characters, these existential characters like Meursault in Camus' book, The Stranger, who sort of sleepwalks through this whole life that he has. And he somehow, through no actual decision of his own, winds up shooting, you know, somebody on this beach, and then finds himself in prison and about to be kind of executed for a murder and he's sleepwalked through everything. It's only at the very end where the reality of his situation has come to him that he actually feels a kind of intensity of being. And this is the kind of thing that Wilson is really, this is what attracted him to Gurdjieff and other kind of philosophers of this. It's this kind of sense of being. He likes to quote from the German philosopher Martin Heidegger, this phrase, the triviality of everydayness. The kind of everyday routine kind of blunts our appreciation of everything. This is why he wrote about crime a lot. He said a lot of criminals, in fact, a lot of murders take place because the person perpetrating them has so dull a sense of their own being that they need some kind of radical act to kind of feel alive. For the few seconds that, you know, this violence erupts in them, they feel a kind of intensity of being that they never felt their whole life. Now, of course, it's more than unfortunate. It's tragic. It's horrific that they're driven to this. But again, the same kind of things that say, he talks about, I mentioned earlier, Hermann Hesse. One of the great examples of this is Hesse's novel Steppenwolf, which was, you know, very big in the late 60s and 70s. And obviously the band Steppenwolf took their name from it and all that. And the Steppenwolf character is someone who has external freedom. He doesn't have obligations and responsibilities. He has enough money to live on his own. He could do what he wants. He can spend his days reading or listening to music or anything like that. But he feels this encroaching kind of boredom and ennui coming over him all the time. And his freedom becomes a burden. And if you know the novel, the beginning of it, he's walking around, you know, deciding when to go back home, when to slit his throat. But what happens is that he stops at a cafe, has a glass of wine, and suddenly this kind of experience happens to him, this freedom experience we can have. Suddenly he's reminded of his freedom. It becomes real to him again. We all really have this freedom. Our problem is that we don't really grab that we have it most of the time. We tend to need some kind of crisis, some kind of threat, something to shock us into feeling it. And Wilson wanted to find a way to be able to do that without having to go through these inordinate, you know, means of doing it, like the threat of suicide. And he always tells the story of the writer Graham Greene, who as a teenager felt this excruciating boredom
We've got Gary Lachman and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The award-winning graphic converter, the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. Get 20% off from lemkesoft.de/gene. That's lemkesoft.de/gene. As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
Will the government protect your family from Iran and North Korea's newest weapon, EMP? We buy guns to protect ourselves, home, health, and car insurance for accidents. Maybe you also have food storage. But how would you keep your refrigerator running in a long-term EMP blackout? Using tested military designs, the Solark EMP-hardened solar generator protects and powers your critical appliances for years without burying items underground or wrapping them in aluminum foil. Unlike other preps, Solark is used every day to help offset your electric bill automatically. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to learn how easily expandable the system is. Solark is the most affordable and powerful solution on the market. The whole system even fits in the back of a pickup or SUV and can install in less than an hour. See for yourself why Solark beats other off-grid systems at PortableSolarLLC.com. Don't wait for the government. Go to PortableSolarLLC.com to learn why Solark is energy insurance for your family.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
You're fired.
According to the Small Business Administration, 75% of small businesses plan to eliminate jobs or reduce workers' hours to part-time.
You're fired.
According to Gallup, the unemployment rate recently jumped to nearly 9%, and the underemployment rate hit a staggering 17.9%.
You're fired.
One out of three young adults and one out of two recent college graduates are underemployed. Hello, I'm Keith Abel, a pharmacist and a home business entrepreneur. In 2011, I became one of those statistics myself. Instead of looking for another job in corporate America, I joined Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. We're creating steady incomes for ourselves and would like to show you how to do the same. If you want to supplement your current income, replace your income, so you don't have to become one of the statistics, then give me a call toll-free at 866-257-3105, 866-257-3105.
You're fired.
Don't wait till you hear those words. Start creating an extra income today, 866-257-3105.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Blockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. BlockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We're immersed in a lot of fascinating discussions here for the final three segments of the Paracast with Gary Lachman talking about Colin Wilson and so many different subjects to get into. Go ahead, please.
I was going to say, I was telling you a story of the writer Graham Greene, a famous British writer. When he was a teenager, he suffered this excruciating boredom. so badly that he was driven to play Russian roulette. He came across a revolver that his older brother had stashed away somewhere. And what he did is that he took the revolver, he put one bullet in, you know, one of the chambers, spun the whole thing, and put it to his head. And then when the hammer clicked on an empty chamber, and he didn't blow his brains out, he suddenly had this enormous experience of well-being. And everything suddenly became interesting. Everything that he was bored to tears with 5 minutes ago suddenly became infinitely interesting to him. From that, Wilson concludes that what had happened? The world didn't change. It was always there. The infinite possibilities that Green was able to suddenly see had always been there. He was blind to them. Why was he blind to them? Well, because his consciousness had been so dull. It had been so limp. It was as if he was trying to pick up things, you know, with his hands just like covered in butter. You know, he couldn't grab hold of anything. And suddenly the threat of instant annihilation wakes him up. And he kind of, you know, does this kind of concentration. And suddenly that's what happens. So Wilson is basically trying to say, like, well, yes, we are all like Graham Greene in some way. We all undervalue our experience, and it's only under threat that we can feel its true value. Is there some way we can feel that true value without putting a gun to our head? That's what his philosophy is about.
Wow. Another thing that I'm seeing here, looking through this incredible list of books authored by Wilson, he did quite a number of biographies, and there seems to be a pretty consistent thread throughout the biographies that kind of dovetail with his interests that he would address, you know, in his other books. Do you have any particular favorites that you could recommend to our listeners? Because when we have an author on who's done a biography of someone as prolific as Wilson, it's always good to give people, if they're interested, a sense of where's a good starting point. And I think some of the biographies might be a good place for people to kind of get into his writing style and his thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, he wrote biographies of Bernard Shaw, and he wrote a biography of Rudolf Steiner. So that gives you a kind of, you know, idea of his range. I mean, Bernard Shaw was one of the great, you know, playwrights of the earlier 20th century. He's not quite as revered as he was at one point, but he was a world famous kind of figure. Rudolf Steiner is an Austrian kind of polymath who developed this, depending on how you look at it, you know, rather strange spiritual philosophy, and is also. He's also behind many of the Waldorf or Steiner schools and all this alternative education. Wilson was always attracted to ideas, and he was attracted to the people who had the ideas and how they faced the kind of challenges that he talks about in his book, The Outsider. Mm-hmm. And he's very interested in people's development, how they face, you know, the development of growing, the challenges life presents to you. Do you recoil from them? Do you embrace them? Do you run away from them? Do you run into them head on? So he wrote books about people like Jung, Gurdjieff, Uspensky, who was Gurdjieff's kind of lieutenant, and I've written a biography of as well, because I think he deserves more credit than he gets in most of the books written about Gurdjieff and all of that. He did a biography of Wilhelm Reich.
Oh, very good one, too, I might add.
Yeah, exactly. Steiner, Aleister Crowley. He's mostly interested in people and their ideas, and I mean, reading one of his biographies, it's as much a book about Wilson on these people than it is, you know, wholly about them. So you obviously get his take, but he's always engaging with their ideas. And what he does is he engages with them in a kind of discussion. You know, they're not around anymore, obviously, to talk with him. Perhaps now, when they're all in the next bardo, they're all kind of, you know, banging it out amongst themselves and, you know, having a good old conversation there. This is one of the things I've always liked about his writing. I think one of the best things he does is write about other writers, write about other thinkers, because he really tries to understand what they're saying, what they're proposing, and then he meets it with his own ideas. But I would say if someone coming to Wilson for the first time, if you really want to get a flavor of what he's like, The Occult is a very good start, or the follow-up that came out in the late 70s called Mysteries. Which was, with The Occult is a kind of history of the occult and takes you back and starts sort of Stone Age and brings you up to contemporary times. Mysteries was about what was happening then.
Right. My first two Wilson books. Funny you should
there you go. I mean,
shorter.
I mean, when I was on that little mini search of the miraculous that I mentioned earlier, that was the one book I had with me. It was Mysteries, because at the time I got really into earth magic and ley lines and you know, standing stones and all that. That was very popular at that point. And I went around to all these sites with that book, because he devotes a few chapters to that kind of thing. But there's so much in there, you know, out-of-the-body experiences, the tarot, magic, ESP. He just brought everything together. And his book's a kind of encyclopedia of both the subject and also what people were thinking about it at the time. And I think he's really responsible in many ways for making it at the time, in the early 70s, a respectable, subject of study. Because you have people like, say, Arthur Koestler, who was a well-known political writer and a science writer. And he came out in the early 70s writing about ESP in his book called The Roots of Coincidence. And when he died, and he was very, very successful, he left a large bequest to a university to establish a chair in parapsychology. And I think it went to a university in Edinburgh to do that.
Well, I see a parallel with your output as well. You've written some very good biographies, the list of them. I mean, Jung, Madame Blavatsky, Swedenborg, Crowley, as you mentioned prior. There's Ouspensky, Steiner. You kind of have a similar approach, too, where you're throwing change-ups in there by featuring, you know, writers and thinkers that have been influential in your process. And I think that's, for all writers out there, that's always a good way to, I think, focus not only your own ideas, but focus on how those ideas have developed and how your thinking has progressed based on the kinds of minds that you can appreciate and identify with. So I think it's a bit of a testament to your ability to spread around and let your readers kind of have more of an inside track on your development. And I think that's very good.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm very happy I have had an opportunity to write about these people, because one thing, it allows me to kind of put my ideas together about them. Okay, this is what I've got from Jung, and this is where I see what's important about him. And clearly other people will have got other things and see other things, so it's all part of that conversation. But it's, you know, it allows me to say, okay, yeah, this is what I got, and I can take this and bring it on to the next thing. And
the next thing, ladies and gentlemen, consists of several minutes of necessary business, because that's how radio works. Unless you have, of course, a membership in Paracast Plus, and you won't hear them. Plus.theparacast.com if you're interested. Gary, Gene, Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1 G2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Calben Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FIVESTARSOAP.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Hi, Peter Picaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
This is Kurt 70, author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Now, I don't know how good Gary Lachman was in the recording studio, but he does all those little stingers in one take. Were you one take, Gary?
Pretty good in the studio. I was pretty good in the studio.
So you were a one take wonder in the studio then?
Yes, there was. Well, we had one great one take was the very first Blondie recording. It was a song called Ex Offender that I wrote music for and Debbie wrote the lyrics. But I actually played the guitars. I played guitar on that track. So even though I was the bassist, I played guitar. That was one of the reasons why I had to leave the band. Because I wanted to play guitar more. But there's this group. Well, I should say there's a kind of Dick Dale surf guitar solo in the song, and I did that in one take, but it was recorded in the hallway of Radio City Music Hall because they wanted to get this echo sound. So they had the amp, me playing at one end of this hall, and the mic then at the other end of it. So it was a one take wonder. Yeah,
wish I could say that. Yeah, I have had my moments, but generally I would have to work out a little bit.
Well, it wasn't very difficult what I was playing, so.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had a tendency to put a little bit more pressure on myself than I needed to, which is generally how it goes. You're not so much worried about everything else.
My background in rock and roll has actually helped me in my new career because I give lots of talks.
Right.
And I never feel uncomfortable or stage fright or anything like that because I figure, I played in front of 80,000 people a few times.
Wow.
So. Having a crowd of 50 or 60 or 100 or so is
everything kind of pales in comparison when you think about that, playing for festivals. Yeah. I guess once it gets to a point where there's so many people, it's almost like they're not there, even though they do make a lot of noise.
Absolutely, that's really the case. I remember, I'm sorry, we're going down rock and roll hole, memory lane again, but one show when I was playing with Iggy, we opened for the Rolling Stones at the Silver Dome in Detroit.
Oh my God.
And you can't see anything. It's just black in front of you. But then they hated us. They weren't there to see Iggy Pop. They were there to see
God. Oh, that's even worse.
And they threw everything they could possibly get their hands on at us. So out of this darkness, you suddenly see like sneakers flying, at you.
Jeez, how disconcerting.
I always wonder when they throw things like that, do they come by backstage after and say, can I have that back?
Well, on that show, what happened is Bill Graham, one of the great, rock promoters, what he did was he had somebody collect everything that was thrown at us. And then before the Stones came on, he went out with Iggy Pop and they read off. There was 25 Bic lighters. There are, 16 combs. He just read off everything that was thrown at us. So, and there was money. People threw money at us, quarters and things like that.
Quarters, that could be dangerous. But if they're throwing, rolled up C notes, that would be great.
It was pretty, but there were a couple bottles. So it was a dangerous business.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're the opening act and people pay good money for tickets to see a certain band.
Yeah.
Whoever opens for them, however good they are, you're really getting the short end there, aren't you?
True. But I tell you, I have a secret that I was told at different times to keep to myself. But at that show, I went out into the audience when the Stones were playing because I actually had never seen them, perform. So I was watching them. And then I could see that behind them, there was actually another band. Stones were playing and then behind a partition, there was another band playing. And I figured it out because that's why Keith Richards or Ronnie Wood could, at different times, take their hands off the guitar and kind of just start clapping, over their heads and stuff like that. And the song would keep going. So they kind of had another band behind them, kind of keeping the
rhythm.
They
had ringers?
I swear to God, this was true.
Well, now we're not talking the Monkees in 65 here.
I'm not saying they didn't play at all. But it seemed like there was another band back there keeping the rhythm going so Ron and Keith could kind of, groove.
In what year was this?
1981.
Yeah, Keith
and
was still...
I have to say, the other band on the bill was Santana. So,
Wow, what a great show.
Yeah, that's back in the day.
Well, Santana didn't need to have a band behind him other than the one he played with. But, it's interesting about the Monkees, though. It's kind of crazy here because they all played guitar. David Jones didn't play an instrument, but the other three played guitar. But they had to put Mickey Dolenz on drums because they needed a drummer.
Yeah, I know. Well, they were kind of the first Sex Pistols. They were invented, right? And then they kind of came out and did their own thing and all that.
Even with the death of David Jones, they came out with a new album. Mike Nesmith still performs with them occasionally.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool that they can do it at 70 years old.
Absolutely. And Head has got to be one of the strangest films ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't seen that film.
That's definitely worth the Netflix. Yeah.
A double bill would be that film and performance. And that'll say something really about the tail end of the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah. The performance was a rather.
Very, very dark film.
Very, very, very dark. Yeah, Anita Pallenberg was quite an interesting character.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's all myths around that too, that nobody came out of that alive, as it were, because apparently she became addicted. I forget the actress's name who plays this kind of androgynous, character. You're not quite sure whether it's a boy or a girl. Apparently, she came to a bad end. James Fox, who's the only real actor in the film. The story was that he was actually dosed, while it was being made.
Right.
And such a bad experience that he gave up acting after that and became a born-again Christian for a while. Obviously David Campbell, wound up, the filmmaker wound up blowing his brains out. This is kind of the dark, sinister side of the occult that was attached to this kind of weird stuff that's going on in the 60s that I talk about in my book, Journal of Your Mind, and all that. So it's this kind of, strange, weird kind of milieu there.
Yeah, there's other examples, too, of bands and celebrity types, actresses, actors that
have a string of very bad luck after being publicly identified as having interest in the occult. And it's someone should write a book about that sometime, because there's some good ones.
Probably is. I mean, there's that book, Season of the Witch, that is a good book about the occult and rock and all that. So.
And also the number of people that have a more than a passing interest in the occult that you would never imagine, that they're able to keep any mention or reference to that interest well out of sight of the public. There's quite a number of people that would surprise you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well.
Maybe not you, but it would surprise a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I mean, somebody like Ronald Reagan, he had a real interest in it and all that kind of thing. He's not the first person you would think, you know, to be someone interested in that kind of thing. So, I know it's there, you know. I mean, how what it means and actually what it leads to is another question, but the fact that they actually have the interest is something that's, you know.
But politicians can't be interested in anything that isn't material.
It's true. It's true. Well, who knows about Trump? Who knows what's going to, you know, come out of the closet with him or, you know, whatever, you know.
Well, he watched short attention span theater or something.
Here for 20 years, the States looks really, really increasingly strange.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially coming from the New York area and, you know, watching the, you know, the various pitfalls and pratfalls and trials and tribulations of Trump and any politician from New York, really.
The problem you see there is with the mainstream media, not lamestream, the mainstream media. These are big corporations that are appealing to the widest number of people, getting the best ratings, and they dumb down everything. And because they dumb down anything, when you start getting into abstracts about any particular person, a politician, a rock star, anything, that's way, way, way above their heads, at least in terms of what they want to tell you about. We've got more to come with Gary Lachman and Jean and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Diabetes is at war with your circulatory system. Fight back with Cardivite. Cardivite is a dietary supplement containing powerful herbs for circulation and healthy cardiac function. Improve your energy, stamina, and mental acuity. Reduce swelling, cold hands, and risk of amputation. Get your blood flowing with Cardivite. This 5-star rated product was developed by a diabetic pharmacist and is available online at www.getbloodflowing.com. That's www.getbloodflowing.com.
How confident are you in your food storage? If it was all you had to rely on, would it sustain your family? Hard times, good times, or any time, New Mana Storable Food is the proven superior choice. Learn for yourself what happened when one man ate only New Mana Storable Food for an entire month. Online at PowerPrepper.com. That's PowerPrepper.com. Experience the New Mana difference.
America made food stores are love to eat. Yum!
hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists. Get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
I raised this, so maybe I'll just do it because we have one segment left with you, Gary. It's just been moving so quickly. And that is, this another story. You're writing about a lot of stuff here. As we are with our show and what I write and what Chris writes and what we talk about here, that is way off the radar from the media, what people are being told. Yeah. And so we have someone like a Colin Wilson who has this fascinating life, writing sci-fi, writing crime, writing about philosophy, all sorts of things that also are mostly beyond someone's radar. So, in looking for this, how does anyone or can anyone take this kind of material and break through? I mean, obviously, you had to be involved to some degree with what the popular media might want because of your history in rock and roll. But how does that get done with books like this, or can it?
Well, you know, I think there's a big readership out there. I mean, Wilson himself in his day had a big readership. But, you know, other people doing other work along the same lines are out there in different ways, like Graham Hancock, let's say, or Whitley Strieber. I mean, these are more focused kinds of things on particular topics, ancient civilizations or sort of the abduction experience.
Well, of course, with UFO abductions, you know, they get to be on the simple level. Okay, aliens come here, they take us aboard, do some silly physical examinations, and they send us aloft. And the thing, same thing with UFO sightings. Okay, there's a spaceship. That's it. Ghosts? Yeah, spirits of the dead. It's your dead grandmother wanted to come back and tell you that the secret gold locket's in the safe.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, the real thing is called esoteric. Esoteric means the inner. It's not the surface. It's not the outer covering of things. It's the inner content. It's the kernel. It's not the shell.
But isn't that something we need to understand to better realize what life is all about?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's true that more people today have some sense of that, let's say. I said there was this occult revival in the 1960s that was caught up with lots of other things, you know, the sexual revolution, the psychedelic revolution, social revolutions and all that. At that point, it was part of this big thing that was happening. And then it kind of settled. You know, the revolution didn't really happen. Atlantis didn't really rise. And so, we got into the gritty 70s, but it was an underlying sensibility that was established, and I think it's grown It has its own problems. The New Age has its own problems. It's too simplistic. It doesn't think. It's too uncritical. There's too many wacky things that it just accepts, you know, without thinking about it. But I think it suggests that there's an underlying hunger for this other kind of thing. And yes, most of the stuff about what we've been talking about now, when it shows up on television, it's the most simplistic, dumbed down kind of version. I mean, I've done a few of these documentaries. And the idea is, yes, okay, yes, it's not really well researched and it's not really, you know, insightful, but you're on TV, kid, and you'll get lots of people, you know, hearing what you got to say about it. And so you do a few of those and you realize, well, actually, in many ways, you're not really helping your own cause because you're just kind of providing content for these other guys, you know, that in the end, they're going to say the same thing. And it's the thing that you don't want to say. You want to say the opposite. You got to have faith. You got to hope that there's other people like you out there. And then gradually there'll be an undercurrent. There'll be a kind of osmosis effect where these deeper understandings will spread. They'll spread by word of mouth. They'll spread by programs like this, like what we're doing now and other interviews I do and other programs and other people do these interviews. I think there's a hunger for this kind of thing. But you're not going to see immediate evidence for it. Just like you're not going to see a big neon sign come up over the horizon and say, okay, New Age starts now. Age of Aquarius starts now. It's nothing like that. This is something I'm actually going to be writing about. I've been asked to do an article about this kind of thing. In my books, I often talk about what I call an evolution of consciousness. It means that over history, our basic kind of the form, the shape of our consciousness has changed over time. You know, does that mean that things are getting better? No, I don't think it automatically does. I think consciousness can shift and change during the worst possible crises. And I think that's what we're heading into now or have been in, you know, for the last few decades. It can decimate everything that's around it at the time.
Yeah, hopefully at the very least it'll shake some people out of their waking coma and wake some folks up because...
Absolutely. And before November 8th.
We got to watch this very carefully because talking about politically correct, Gary, I don't know how often you've listened to the PowerCast, but when we get into anything about politics more than just a couple of surface details,
yeah,
it is so polarized there you can't really have a legitimate discussion. Like we have one listener who wrote and says, you know, don't do that, and then said we shouldn't even keep any money that's generated by the show. We should just have entry-level jobs. We're not allowed to touch that money. So, I don't know. There's a lot of wackiness out there.
Well, it's the same thing here in the UK. It's got very polarized recently because of the whole Brexit thing.
Sure, yeah.
Even the EU. And there's an incredible sense of nationalism here now. And there's an incredible sense of everything has to be British and all that kind of thing. And I'm nothing against things being British, but it's a real... on how to say it. A lot of people I know that are Europeans that are from Europe, they've been here for a long time, they're going back because they really feel the atmosphere here is very inimical, you know, to them. And sadly, in some places, this whole thing has unleashed a really horrible kind of xenophobia and jingoism and all that. So I think it's very scary times, you know. I mean, in many ways, Rudolf Steiner, quoting from the Book of Revelations, he talked about the coming war of all against all. And I sometimes wonder if that's, you know, what we're kind of drifting into. I mean, look at Syria. Who's shooting rockets at who?
You know? Right. Just to give you an example of the indigenous culture of the Americas, the Hopi, who've been here for tens of thousands of years. Grandfather Martin, who was a holder of the official, you know, prophecy, Fire Clan prophecy tablets, when he saw one of the Hopi purple flowers coming up through a snow bank during a blizzard, he interpreted that as being fulfillment of one of the prophecies and probably the most harrowing of the prophecies, the beginning of the War of the Gourd of Ashes. And he did a press conference with the governor of New Mexico and said within 6-8 months, the final conflict will start. And that's when 6 months later we went into Kuwait to kick Hussein out of Kuwait in Desert Storm.
Yeah.
And up to his death, he said, yeah, that's it. That's the war. That's the biggie.
Yeah, well, I hope everybody is wrong about that. one of my concerns was like, because I was very, very privileged in my life. I didn't have to go to Vietnam. My father was in World War II. I didn't have to get drafted. I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to do anything. None of that really impinged on my life. But I did start to think, well, actually, when the excrement hits the air conditioner, it's going to be when I'm in my 70s or something like that, or my late 60s, when I'm going to be kind of too old and feeble to actually kind of deal with the fallout. I hope everybody's well.
I resemble that remark because, Gary, I am, as most listeners know, older than you are. You know, we have to end it here because the clock sends me a little message. And it's kind of like a tactic engine that grabs me by the neck and says, wrap the show up. Gary Lachman, where can we find more of the stuff you do?
Well, you can find my books on Amazon, and you could also find stuff about me at my blog, which is basically garylachman.co.uk. And, you know, put my name into Google and you'll find lots of stuff up there.
We even find your age and your birthday, by the way. I don't know if you want that to happen, but we know.
December 24th, 1955.
You're just a mere lad. You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast. Look for a pair of official, don't accept any substitutes, official Paracast fan clubs on Facebook. We also have that second radio show. It's going to be fascinating this week. It's called After the Paracast. And if you want to know more about it, go to plus.theparacast.com to learn about the Paracast Plus. We give you a commercial-free version of this show and other exciting features. The price, as Alfred E. Newman said so many years ago, our price, cheap. It's a monthly subscription price, annual, 5 years, even your lifetime. And I'm going to be here a while, as old as I am. I'm old as the hills. But I'm going to be here for a long, long time. That's what some people tell me. Other people said, you know, you've outlived your usefulness. Just pack it in, man. But I'm not going to do it. If you want to learn more about the Paracast Plus, all the information you need, including simple sign-up instructions, at plus.theparacast.com. Gary Lachman, I'm very happy to meet you and to meet a famous member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and a great author. Thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
Entirely my pleasure.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at ShareTheRoadSafely.gov.